It is my utmost pleasure to welcome you to the 8th lecture of the deep learning course. Sorry, deep reinforcement learning course. I forget the most important part. So welcome. Are there any questions at the beginning? Somebody like to ask something? So I heard the mic to be unmuted, but then it was muted again. So I assume it means that there are no questions. So let me then start with the lecture itself. Today, we will talk about different approaches for continuous training, continuous learning, like in the for working with the environments with continuous actions. We talked about the DDPG at the end of the previous lecture, and now we will consider some other ones, some alternatives. I would say that apart from TRPO, which is not really used, the TD3, Softec, SAC, and PPO, all these acronyms are frequently or widely used policies. So they are really one of the best performing ones in this area. Unfortunately, we got to the part of the course where I don't have the slides prepared as well as I would like to. So we will be using some papers today as well. And I will try to add the materials also to the slides so that you have them on the one place and not just in the recording. Before we get to it, let me start by opening the, so we don't need this thing and we don't need this one. Let me start by opening the last slide of the previous lecture, where we talked about this Ornstein-Uhlenbeck exploration noise, it's a time correlated one instead really of generating the completely independent samples. To show you what the samples look like, this is the comparison. Like here on the right side, you can see several trajectories, several noises generated by this Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. And the interesting thing is that increasing the variance, which means increasing this sigma squared, doesn't really make the variance of the whole process that much larger. For example, here the blue images, that's just the Gaussian noise generated independently, and the red ones, that's the mean value of the noise using this Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. And you can see that with the higher variance of the noise, for Gaussian it really increases nicely, while for the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process it makes the mean to move, but it doesn't really increase the variance too much. So people have wondered whether the larger like whether the noise generated by the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process is actually enough, but when you consider it empirically on six tasks, you can see that it's not that much conclusive. The orange results are the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process, so here they increased a bit, but in many of the environments the difference are not that large, right? So the other papers following DDPG in many cases did not use the process, and it seems the results are still quite nice. So it's not really the essential part of the assignment of the algorithm. So let's start by TD3. TD3, it's a twin delay deep deterministic policy gradient. So this DDPG, that's the DDPG as before. And now there are two more things, edit, twin, and delay. Right, the paper has a different name. It's addressing function approximation error in electrocritic methods. And it improves the DDPG with some number of elements. So it's really just the DDPG on steroids, right? First, it decreases the maximization bias by training two critics and then choosing the minimum of their prediction. I will talk about all these points. So that's one thing. Some maximization bias will be again squashed. And then we have the second set of improvements, which decrease variance. That's always bad to have noisy estimates. So there are two methods for doing so. One is the delayed policy updates, which is like the reason why the delay is here. Also this twins is the reason why there will be some two critics. So as of now, I would say that for policy continuous learning, this TD3 algorithm is currently the best one, maybe together with the soft actor critic. So regarding the maximization bias, we know that in the Q-learning, there was a maximization bias, which was caused by this explicit max operator, right? When we wanted the value function in the next state, then choosing the action with one set of Q-values, and then also estimating it using one set of Q-values caused the maximization bias. In the DDPG, there is no explicit maximum operator anywhere, but the bias is caused by the gradient descent itself. So what I'm presenting on this slide is the thought or is an argument presented by the authors in the paper. So assume that we have some true action value function and some parameters which would be the best one for this like actual action value function. And then we have some estimation, Q theta, and we have some parameters which are currently the best ones for this Q theta. And the thing is that the parameters which we have are like the best ones with respect to the current estimation, current estimate of this Q value, while these true ones are the ones which maximize the true action value function. And from that, we can get a set of inequalities. So because the gradient direction is the one like which works the best in our estimate Q theta, then on some small surroundings we have that the performance of the policy of the approximated policy is better than the true value policy. Okay, so this was terrible. So again, we consider these two action value functions. And if we take the one which is generated by our approximation, well, then the gradient itself makes sure that this is like a reasonable optimum, and its value is better than the value of the true policy in this estimation of the action value function. Now, on the other hand, if you go the other way around, if we consider the true action value function, then the true policy is better than the policy of our parameters, the one which maximizes the currently estimated value function. And so now when you start here, go here, we don't know what's happening here. Okay, when I did to start, then go here. So if and this is the part which is not really discussed much in the paper, but if the estimate it's not obvious what the relation is of the estimate of the true policy in the Q theta, the approximation, and the real one, right? But if this is I don't know, approximately the same, it means that the expected return for our approximate policy in this Q theta is larger or equal to its value in the real policy, right? So this is the approximation bias trying to show us that the policy which we have works better for the action value function than in reality. It's not really that surprising. However, the authors say that this seems like a systematic problem, and it would be a good idea to somehow get rid of it. And it's not caused by some maximum, but it's really caused by our policy trying to maximize the estimation, not the true Q value. And this actually makes because we are approximating this the one critic value, we can like adapt to it and get systematic overestimates. So I'm not really sure. I am fine with this argument, especially I'm not really sure how it is when we compare these two values. But in any case, the authors also show some empirical evidence in addition to to this argument. So here on the left side, you can see the regular DDPG, that's the orange one. The orange dots are the real action values or real performance of the train policy, and the orange ones are the estimates during the training, right? So these dots, they are measured by actually taking the snapshot of the policy and then just running a lot of simulations and see what the actual average value is. And the orange one is the one predicted by the critic during the course of the algorithm. And you can see that there is like a systematic difference there, right here as well. On the other hand, if you take this couple CDQ, that's the approach used by the authors. Then you can see that the estimates and the true values are very similar. So there are several ways how we could deal with the maximization bias. Analogously to the double DQ learning, we could compute the learning targets using the current policy and the target critic, right? To be not really to adapt, not to choose just one set of networks to both generate the actions and then estimate it. So instead, we could use the current policy to generate the actions and then the target critic. That's what the D double DQ learning did. And that's what the authors dub this DDQN actor critic. However, the authors found that the policy is changing too slowly. So the target networks and the policy and the current networks are too similar. And so it's not enough to get rid of the bias, right? So you can see that for the violet ones, there is still some non-trivial gap. Or we could use the solution which we did for double Q learning and create two pairs of actors and critics and then use them in a crossed way, right? So we could learn targets computed by like one actor and then the opposite critic. So this way we would hope that there would not be so much shared in between them, and the maximization bias would be reduced. So it's can see that it's a bit better. Here are the differences between the red dots. The smaller, but it doesn't work as well as what the authors propose. So the authors propose to employ two critics and one actor. The actor is just trained using one of the critics. However, these critics, they are both trained using the same target. And this target considers the minimum of both critics. So because we are worried that we are suffering from the overestimation bias, we are from the maximum overestimation, then we instead try to battle it by actually computing the minimum, right? So if we have got two critics, then we will take the prediction of the more conservative one, right? So then in the temporal difference method, we will just take the reward plus gamma times the minimum of whatever the critics predict. So that's this baseline. Let me just write myself a note. I want to add here what CDQ means. So that's one thing, getting rid of the maximization bias. Then there are two improvements for variance reduction. One is that we need to make sure that the critics are actually good, that the gradient estimation which comes from them will guide the policy in a good direction. So the authors propose to spend more time training the critics than the actors, so that we make sure that there is less noise in the critics. And what they do is they really just alternate and train update the actor only every second step by default. And then the authors propose a third improvement. That's the target policy smoothing. Idea is that similar actions should lead to similar results. So when we are computing the value estimate, right, we take the policy action predicted by the target actor. So the authors add some small noise here to the chosen action. So if you have the transitions stored in the buffer, what they do is they add some small noise to the predictions of the current target actor. It's a bit like a novel thing. I really didn't see this until this paper. But generally, you want the predictions to be smooth. So using this as the, like, I haven't really convinced myself whether this is just whether it's like a noise reduction or noise introduction, right? You do this when you compute the estimate for the current state. And I never decided how exactly this should work. The motivation that the similar action should lead to similar results is nice, but this doesn't really train the actor, right? You just use this. Maybe it even decreases the maximization bias as well, because like we are doing this minimum. So if this epsilon will move one of these critics to even lower value, then that's what we will actually use. Well, in any case, the algorithm is in the end very similar to the DDPG. We generate the episodes in the same way, and then during training we sample the transition, compute the action using the target actor, but adding the noise with some fixed maximum and minimum. Then we compute the value using the target critic and like two target critics and compute their minimums. And then we update first the critics. We use the same target for both of them. And once upon a time, we also update the actor by using the DPG. And we also update the target networks. Similarly to DPG, exponential moving average is being used to track the two target critics and one target actor. Definitely. I think it's... Yes, just a seat. We train them in the same way, right? We train both of them with the same function. They get the same targets, so it's just a seat. And the initial weights are so important and in the neural networks that it seems that if there is some noise, then this noise will stay uncorrelated, right? The thing is, it doesn't matter if they go to the same value. So if they converge, it's fine, because then they won't give you the noisy estimates. What you don't like are like the overestimations. And I think the idea is that if one of them is overestimating them, then the chance of the other doing the same is smaller. And so then if you take the minimum of these values, then you are using conservative prediction. Yes, we could have five of them. It seems it's not important just by looking at the graphs, right? So when you get two, the real values and the predictions are reasonably good. If you had a lot of them, then you would probably start suffering from a minimization bias, because if you are computing minimum out of a lot of them, then there is the chance of getting an underestimation would get higher and higher. So using a lot of them would probably make the dotted line go even higher, or the other way, the non-dotted line go even lower. So in theory we could, but I think there would be a natural limit on where you need to stop. Looking at the hyperparameters, they are slightly, I would say, simpler. In the DDPG, they use the same learning rate for the actor and for the critic, while for the DDPG, they had a smaller learning rate for the actor. Well, maybe the target policy smoothing helps with that. No specific regularization. The idiom optimizer, they have the paper contains graphs showing the different target update rates, how they influence the outcome, and it seems like a wide range of them actually works. So they use 5 × 10⁻³. Not important. And they just use the Gaussian noise as an exploration. So they don't bother with the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. And here are the results. So once again, there are some environments here. I have some images later in the other policies. In the other algorithms. But the TD3 is the blue one. So generally, you can see that in most of the tasks, it works reasonably well, or maybe as one of the best methods. But sometimes it's probably just the hyperparameters. For example, for half cheetah, they re-implemented the DDPG, and that's actually the green line here. So what's interesting about it? So compared to DDPG, they are, at least on these tasks, always better, or at least the same as DDPG. Well, yeah, here for inverted, they are slightly worse. Okay, so mostly better, but sometimes by a huge margin, and they train faster. The funny thing was that this paper came out in parallel with the soft actor critic paper, and the so they came up on archive, and then they realized that there is some other team working on very similar or on algorithm solving very similar situation. So they referenced each other's, including the results, and they also like spent more time on improving their own. So there were like three or four versions of the paper, each like slightly improving their own results, and then also tracking the performance of the other paper. But right now, the final versions of both papers, they cite the different versions of the competitor, right? So these soft actor critic values are much lower than the ones which they present in the SAC paper, and the SAC paper shows less number, small numbers than the TD3 have here. Yep. In any case, TD3 seems to work quite well. There are some ablations here. Well, I think we will look at the numbers. So this TD3, that's the final version, like the DDPG, that's the original DDPG, and this AHE, that's the performance of the DDPG, but with the hyperparameters using from the TD3, right? So in a sense, this is the version of the DDPG more comparable to what the TD3 does. So you can see that for the Half-Cheetah, it is much better, but sometimes it also worse. So it's just for comparison. And now what we can see is we can see the individual components. There are three components which we want to evaluate. One is the delayed policy update. Then there is this target policy smoothing, and CDQ, which is the double critics, so the critic double Q learning, or how would you say so? So here is just one of them being used, like 3v3. It's a this one plus all three of them, that's the numbers on top. Then here you can see like how much would the DDPG improve by using the different improvements. So generally, this it seems that what helps most are the two critics. So they help here, they help here, they help here, but not so much for the Half-Cheetah. Here it seems the target policy smoothing is the best improvement, but the delayed policy updates are also one of the best improvements here on the Hopper. So I would say that there are not really no really conclusions from this point, and it seems that all of these techniques seem to help sometimes. These are the ablations where there are two of the improvements, right? So complete TD3 with one of them being turned off. When you look at it like this, then generally, like dropping the double critics seems to be the biggest loss. Once again, apart from the Half-Cheetah, right? So this row is the smallest one out of those. So two critics seems to be the important thing, but still, just using two of these improvements, for example, here on Hopper, would be like worse than using all of them together. Yep. So these environments are like a continuous environments where you want to, where you control some number of robots. I have very small images, unfortunately, here. So the Hopper is like I don't know, like robot like this, which has the joint here and the joint here, and it tries to move. Like in all these environments, you usually want to move somewhere, so you get points by being able to stand and actually move forward. And these different robots have like different number of joints and different number of bars, or how to say, connecting them. So the hopper just needs to hop. There is the walker. That's this one, which has some knees and legs. I'm just doing it approximately. Then there is this half cheetah, right? Half cheetah has some legs, so it really can run slightly like a cat or something, right? And there is the ant and the simple and full humanoid. And an ant is like a sphere with four legs. It's much heavier than the other ones, so it generally cannot really be too much in the air. For the other ones, you can just really jump a lot and spend a lot of time in the air, while the ant is a bit heavy, so it generally needs to keep two legs on the ground. All of these are like in the papers, they used the Mukojo simulator to simulate these environments, and unfortunately this engine is a commercial one, so even now you would need a paid license to actually be able to use these environments, which is a shame that it started like this. But now people don't want to not use this engine, because then they couldn't compare with a related work, so and it's still quite expensive, and they don't really have a motivation to decrease the price of the license. However, this year I found out that the Pi Bullet engine, like that's like another open source physics engine, and they actually provide all of these environments as the gym environments. So if you install the Pi Bullet package, you can just import the environments and then use them as usual, as some other gym environments. But they only have the binaries compiled for Linux, so I will look into it, and if it will be simple to even to create the Windows ones somehow, we will be using them as well in the assignments. But right now I'm still evaluating this. But if you want to play and try your DDPG algorithm on something more 3D, than just the pendulum, for example, then you can definitely do it. So that was the DD3, like a conservative, I would say, improvement of the DDPG. Yes? I don't know if it makes sense to use it here or not. Well, it doesn't use it, but if we look at it, what we would use as the error, this thing probably, like that's what we normally use. We use the error to take the samples from, to sample them. Well, I don't know how to do it. Because we actually have two TD errors, right? Because we are computing this this prediction by the minimum of the two critics. So we have two TD errors. Of course, we could just use the one of them. I don't know whether the smaller one or the larger one, but I haven't actually used, I haven't seen this being used somehow. So I don't know, but a good question. Yep. So now let's get to this soft actor critic. The soft actor critic is, I would say, an interesting algorithm. I will show you what I mean from a theoretical perspective. That they come with way of constructing policies from the action value functions, right? So they will be able to actually use learned Q values and transform them directly into policies. Like one of the reasons why we used the policy gradient theorem was that we didn't know how to do it. The DQNs just had the Q values, and then we just had the policies, and they are like separated. So they were able to come up with a way how you can do it. I would say that at the beginning, the TD3 had much better results, but they actually copied a lot of their improvements. They are also using two critiques and computing the minimum of those, and I'm not sure if they are not even doing the policy, the delayed policy update. And by using these improvements, they were able to improve their algorithm also to provide the good results. So in a sense, it's not like they would start with such a huge numbers, but they were able to get there by using the tricks from the TD3 paper. But I think it's still interesting, the theoretical background. Unfortunately, I don't have all of these in my slide, so let's get to the paper. This is the soft vector critique paper, and what do the authors do is they embed the entropy regularization directly to the definition of the value function and the action value function. So what they do is in a sense, they will want to maximize entropy. So the goal there will be to come up with policies with maximum entropy, and by that I mean policies which are as unsure as possible, but still producing a good reward. So what they do is they use the following objective. The soft value function looks like this. It's the expectation over the states and actions given by the policy. And apart from the return, which is what you would or these are actually these are actually yep. Apart from the returns, we these are rewards. Yes. So apart from the rewards, we also include the entropy directly to our objective, right? So we have soft value function. Normally, we want the largest return, and here we embed this entropy directly in the value function. So we want policies which have a large sum of rewards, but they also have large entropy. There is the temperature parameter alpha, which says, of course, how much do we actually want this large entropy compared to actually getting a lot of rewards from the environment. In the rest of the paper, they say that they don't actually use the alpha anymore to make the notation simpler, but you can easily easily scale the rewards from the environment, and that will have the same effects as changing alpha actually. And this objective will allow them to first, we are performing entropy regularization anywhere, so it doesn't usually hurt us. And the good thing is that it will have actually a nice theoretical properties. So because we have changed the definition of the soft state value function and the soft action value function, a lot of the theoretical results is not guaranteed to hold, right? So ideally, we would see that the policy evaluation and the policy improvement still work, even with the different definition. And that will turn out to be the case. So how we do it? Well, we define a soft Bellman backup operator, which does what you would expect, just the update, including the the entropy regularization. So let's define the soft state value function to look like this. It will be the action value function. That's the not the soft one, but the regular one. I'm thinking. So we have sampled. Oh yeah. So this is the. Okay. Now I expected the definition to look a bit different, and now I'm a bit stuck. So when we look at the objective, it says it's the reward plus the entropy, and the entropy is the minus of p of the action times the logarithm of the p of the action. So when you look at it in this expectation, then when we want to compute the value function, we can take the expectation by taking the actions from the policy and then looking at the q value function, right? That what we have already done before. Here we need to also subtract this part here, because that's not actually included in the q value function. So I've got hold of myself. So this is the soft q value, but what we need to do is we need also to consider the entropy, and because we have sampled an action, then we just use the logarithm of the probability of the action, because the p a of this action is just one in the sample, right? So that was unnecessary long, but anyway, when we have this soft state value function and soft state action value function, then we can define the Bellman backup operator, so that one step looks like adding the rewards and gamma times looking at the soft value function, right? So this one includes the entropy in the next state. Yep. And this is when this is applied to the action value function. If it would be applied to the value function only, then there would be another entropy edit to the return. But because we are mapping the action value function, then the entropy is hidden only in the next state. And the claim is that the soft policy evolution, like repeatedly applying this modified operator, will converge to the real Q value, right? That's the policy evaluation. For that, we would like to prove that this operator is a contraction in a suitable space, which is the case. The thing is, we can actually, for a fixed policy, when we have a fixed policy, we can hide this factor inside the rewards, right? So we can create a different environment, which for a fixed policy just adds this to every reward it generates. So this is actually, so we can use the proof in the previous setting to actually prove this. But the most interesting part is on this page. So how should the policy improvement look like? And the authors suggest that generally we want the policy to be the exponent of the Q value function. So we have some old policy, pi, right? We can, for a given state, we can look at the Q value estimates for this policy and in these states. And then what we do is we take the softmax of the results, right? That's what this exponentiation will do. And this is the improved policy. So if we have the original policy, then computing the softmax over the Q-value estimates of this policy will improve it. And what they say, well, they say that when we have the policy, we might not be able to just say, okay, this is the new policy, right? Because it's parametrized in some way. And so maybe this specific policy is not really a part of our family of models and so on and so on. So generally, we want to find such a policy which is the closest one with respect to this softmax. And what they do is they measure this using the KL divergence, right? That's a way how to compare distributions. So so the new policy will be such a policy which will minimize the KL divergence of the new policy and the softmax of the Q values of the previous policy, of the old one. So this is something what seems like reasonable, right? We have Q values, so why not say that if they are very similar, we will just sample these actions reasonably often, and if they are too far apart, then we will just not do it. And that's what exactly this says, that it generates the distribution from the Q values. And for that, what we needed is to also care about the entropy. Right, in a sense, softmax is a solution to the maximum. Like softmax can be derived by using the maximum entropy principle. So in a sense, the softmax is a distribution which has a maximum entropy. So that's why they needed this entropy constraint to be embedded in the environment, so that now this softmax will actually be able to come up with the best solution. So I think if you want to think about something like this, you just know that the softmax is something that you would like to try because it seems like a natural thing to do. In order to be able to do it, you know that it's something which maximizes entropy. So if you like come up with an environment which also wants to maximize the entropy, then maybe it will click, and it did click in this case. So the interesting thing is that the policy improvement actually works, right? So assume that we have some old policy and we have the new policy, which is found out by minimizing the KL divergence. Then what the theorem or the soft policy improvement theorem says, that the soft Q value for this new policy is better or at least equal to the previous ones. And it will work that if we change something, that it will be like strictly better. So that's a good thing. Let's look at the proof. The proof is not that bad. So we knew that the new policy is the minimum to this KL divergence. Generally, this Z factor is something which we will mostly ignore because it's there just for the normalization, right? That's just the denominator normalizing the softmax distribution. And we will denote this part by J and the policy which we for which we use the Q function, and then the policy which we actually use. So it's a bit weird, but this subscript tells us which Q value are we actually using to compute the estimates, right? And this parameter tells us what is the value policy which we are evaluating. Now, given that this new policy is the minimum of this, then of course the value must be smaller or equal to the previous one, right? Because it was we could have chosen the previous policy always. When we know that this is true, we can just expand these definitions. So this scale divergence, it goes over the actions, right? So when we sample like on this left side, this care leverage is the expectation of the action sampled from the new policy. And the care divergence is the probability of whatever we are thinking about of the logarithm of the first distribution divided by the logarithm of the second one. So this log pi nu, that's the logarithm of this number. And then we have a minus logarithm of this value. The logarithm and the exponentiation will cancel out. So there is just the q pi alt, and there is this factor which we will just avoid in the like we will just cancel it. And on the right side, we have the previous policy. We are sampling the actions from the previous policy. We are computing the entropy from the previous policy, but we are estimating it using the same Q function. So now we can get rid of the partition function because it depends only on the state, and we are computing the expectation only for actions. So what we get is that, well, on this right-hand side, this is the soft value function of the previous policy. And here on the left side, that's something analogous what we had in the policy improvement theorem. That's the evaluation of the new policy, but using the old estimate. So using the Q value estimates for the old one. Now we will do the same expansion as we did in the policy improvement theorem. So when we look at how the how well the policy worked, when we look at the Q estimate for the old policy, then by definition, it's the reward plus gamma times the expected return of the old policy. Now we know that for this one specific state, it is actually better, or at least the same, like at least the same or even better, to sample the actions in this first step just using the new policy, right? So we replace this by sampling once from the new policy and then sampling from the old policy. And again, we will rewrite this part by performing by soft action value function in the ST plus one. And once again, we will know that from this, we know that in one step, it's actually better to behave as a new policy, and we can iterate the argument, right? So the important part was to proving this, that when we look at it from one step, it's actually better to sample the first action from the new policy. And this, what we found it by knowing that we were minimizing this the scale divergence, so the new policy must be better than the old one, and the combination of the KL divergence and the softmax and the cross and the entropy regularization all clicked together and allowed us to get this this property. So that's was the policy improvement theorem. We are close. So that's the policy improvement, and the authors also prove that the policy iteration converges and finds a local optimum. So if we alternate the policy evaluation and the policy improvement, right, that's what the policy iteration is, then it also works in these settings. It's actually not not difficult to prove, because the we know from the policy improvement that the new policy is greater or larger. So we have a function which is like monotonically increasing or staying the same. So what we do, we know that like if we do this, it will converge, because we have the good thing is that the rewards and the entropy are bounded. So the Q value is bounded as well. So we have monotonically like a sequence which increases or at least doesn't decrease, increases or is the same. There is an upper bound, so it needs to converge. It converges to some policy, and we don't know whether this is like, we still need to prove that this is the optimal one. So we need to prove that all other policies actually have the worse average return. But for that, we can actually use the same argument as in the previous policy improvement step, right? So when we get this optimal policy, then we can consider some other policy. At convergence, it must be the case that all other policies would not be the solution to this minimization, right? So when you have converged, then it means that if you repeat the optimization one more step, this new policy, this pi prime, cannot be better than what you have, because otherwise you would not converge. And from this, you can conclude that for all other policies, their value is not as good, or at least the same as the my policy. So I am actually the optimal policy. So this is the nice settings where we know like there is a different way how we can train the policy, like the actor part of the network, by actually looking at the softmax of the predicted Q value. So that's the novel stuff. Then the rest is again some engineering. So the authors, they propose to use three networks, or three models. One is the soft value function, right? Then the other will be the action value function, soft action value function, and then there will be the agent, the actor. So they have an actor, and they have a critic, and they also have the value function. The value function is not strictly necessary. We could just sample it from the Q network. However, they say that it stabilized training nicely for them, so they decided to include it, right? During training of the value function, what we do, well, when we see a transition, we just consider the Q value estimate to be the value estimate and minimize the mean square error, right? So this is a straightforward thing. For the Q value, it's the same thing. So we use bootstrapping to compute the estimation in the next step. And we use it as the target, once again, generating, like using a mean square error to train the Q value estimates. When training these Q value estimates, we actually need to know the value of the next state. This is the place where instead of using the target actor, as in the TD3, they use just the train value function. But we need this to be really stable. So they use the target value function. So they actually have the target value function, which is being used as the one performing the bootstrapping. And the actor minimizes the KL divergence between the policy and the softmax of the given Q values. And I said that the tricks from the TD3 is being used, so they are. First, we need to, or we don't need to, but the algorithm uses two Q functions to mitigate the bias, right? So we actually use two networks, which will compute the Q estimates. Right, you can see that there are two of them, and we will compute the minimum of these values when we want to in the policy improvement step. And the improvement step is the one where we update the policies. So whenever we update the policies, we actually take the minimum of the two predictions. Right. Yeah, and they say that it trains with one, but with two functions, it actually trains significantly faster. So it means it actually reduces the bias probably, which is there. Yep. And in a sense, similar to the delayed policy updates, they, oh well, no, this is not really a delayed policy update, so nothing. But what they do is they take a single step, and then they can take one or even more gradient steps, right? So like we do the simulation, and then we do some number of the updates. The we have only one target network, that the one predicting values. And we use the exponential moving average to compute it. The question is, like, when we minimize the KL divergence, what we will need to do is we will need to compute the derivative of the Q function. So either we could use some stochastic policy gradient to do it, but it's not really necessary, given that we have the Q function, which is differentiable, right? So they actually use the estimator, which is the very similar to what the DDPG does. Like generally, well, the function J, right, which we want to minimize, is this KL divergence. So that's this expectation when we take the states from the buffer, from the replay buffer, sorry. And what do we have here is the logarithm of this minus the logarithm of this. So it's the logarithm of the policy minus the Q value function. Now we need to compute the gradient of this, which means there will be the gradient of Q there, right? And that's the difficult part. So either we will just use the policy gradient theorem, because the stochastic policy gradient theorem tells us how to estimate the gradient of the value function. But here, because we can actually compute the gradient of the Q itself, of the critic itself, we do it, right? So we get an update, which is in a sense a combination of the stochastic policy, right? Because we have a stochastic policy, plus the actually computing the derivative of the Q value function. Yep. So that was tense. They unfortunately don't have a table with the results. They just have images. So compared to TD3, let me open this. Yep. So they are the orange one, right? So according to their images, they are best in Hopper, half cheetah, humanoid, and ant, which is not how it looks in this table. So in Hopper, they say they have something like 3.2. Yeah, so they say that they have better results than here, but worse than TD3. In half cheetah, they claim, they claim to be much better than the TD3 claimed, and they claim to be much better than the TD3. And then, like, comparing these, you can see that sometimes the TD3 images are real, what they have here. Sometimes the authors claim actually different values, so it's really confusing. In any case, both of these algorithms seem to work well. What they do is they show that using stochastic policy make the training be much like smoother, much less noisy. You can see that if they train a deterministic policy, you can see the trajectories, the red ones, and if they use the stochastic policy, you can see that they get these blue ones, which are all much more similar to each other. They also show that during evaluation, it's the other way around. So even if you could sample from the full distribution generated by the actor, just taking the mean of the actions seem to be the best one. Because they want to generate continuous actions, they actually use the usual parametrization of the normal distribution. So for each action, they generate a mean value and a variance for it. Here, the reward scaling was the important thing. This changes the influence of the entropy factor in the definition of the soft reward, or I would and it is important. Like if you think about it, what does this alpha says? It tells you how, if you generate the policy from the Q value functions, then I have to write, I cannot just say it. Assume that we have got these Q functions, right? So we have some Q values. I don't know, like this. Now we turn it by softmax into a policy pi. So this will be the most probable action, this will be the second most probable, this will be the third most probable. But the question is, how smaller this value or this value should be. Like we know that it will be softmax of something, but generally when you compute the softmax of these Q value functions, then we might be tempted or we need to decide like what size means a lot, right? Maybe we could specify some distance, which means this action is 10 times more likely than this one. Like the scale of converting the Q values into probabilities actually, and this depends exactly on the size of the entropy regularization. Like the more stochasticity you want from the policy, the larger distances you will consider when generating the policy. Technically, this just surmounts to like a temperature which you can use to either divide or multiply the Q values by. So that's what they call the reward scale, right? Because this temperature of this softmax is exactly what will influence whether you will for this input just as okay, it's just this section and nothing else, or whether you will really respect these differences and will do something like this. And as you would expect, it will be some kind of a trade-off. So one is too low and 100 is too low, and there is some optimal value of, I don't know, 10 for them. So you need to make sure that the constant for the entropy regularization is a reasonable one, and they haven't avoided in searching for it. You still need to find it, and you need to be careful, and it may be specific for different environments and so on and so on. And here they consider different target smoothing coefficients. So that's the momentum in the exponential moving average. They found that quite a wide range actually works. So 0.1 is too small, so it diverges. But of values between 100th and 10,000th all works reasonably well. And they use something like 0.005 for all of their experiments, which is not accidentally the same constant the TV3 guys use as well. So that was the soft actor critique. The things will appear in the slides, hopefully. Some questions. No questions. Everybody is dead. Nevertheless, we still have something like 22 minutes. So let me deal quickly with TRPO and PPO. The PPO algorithm, it's proximal policy optimization, something like this. It's an algorithm which you can, proximal policy optimization, yes it is, which you can see around, and you can see it being used. It's you can still see being used. And it's an on policy algorithm, which, you know, by the way, both the TD3 and SAC are all off policy because the sampled actions are not really being used anywhere in the updates, right? For the SAC, we have the value function, which we train. And for TD3, we use the target actor to get the estimates of the action. So they both can be used with a replay buffer, but PPU will be an on-policy algorithm. And it uses a different way of like computing the gradient of the value function, which goes back which uses ideas which go back very very far in the past, like 20 years ago. First, what we need to talk about is the natural policy gradient. And the natural policy gradient is just a sexy name, for the second order method. I don't know if you know the natural gradient descent, right? But the natural gradient descent is like a better version of a general gradient descent algorithm. And the idea is that, normally when we train SGD, we say that we update the weights by minus alpha times the gradient of the loss. And what is the motivation behind this? Assume that you want to train the parameter, that we want to train we want to update the parameters in order to minimize the loss, right? So what we want to do is we would like to find the direction, so direction D, such that, the loss for the weights which we have plus D would be the minimal one, right? So let's say that we want to find such a direction bounded by some constant, such that when we add it to the weights, we minimize the loss, right? This is something what you would expect. And the result of this is that actually this D, that this direction in which you should take in order to minimize the loss, is actually the negative gradient. Right, and if we have this constraint here, then it would be of length. It would be of length C. However, there might be some things which this doesn't really considers well. Okay, so this. Condition saying that we want to find the small change in the weights such that it will minimize the weights doesn't really reflect much how the change in the parameters influence the final prediction. Like if you change the scales, then some of these weights should be changed with larger values, some of them should be changed by smaller values. And when you just say that you have this constraint of considering the changes with where the Euclidean distance is at most C, then it is a limiting factor. I don't know, there is a nice image here, right? So imagine that you're optimizing a problem and the minimum is somewhere, somewhere here. And your model has two parameters, right? One of them and they are like trying to point to the correct target place, right? They are just the gradients on this valley. And now in the usual SGD, we just consider the direction in which we like weight all these two dimensions in the same way. So we just use the Euclidean distance to measure measure the length of the change. However, if we reflected the fact how changes in the weights will influence the results, and then we will get this image where you can see that the red arrows always point very close, or definitely much closer to the place where we want to get. And the difference is that we consider a different metric. So instead of saying that we want to change the parameter slightly, we might change it. We want to change the prediction slightly. Right. So what we could do, you could say, okay, let us change the weights so that the prediction of the model will change only slightly, and we want to update the parameters so that we will help with the final loss function. So assume that we have a model which generates a distribution. So instead of considering the parameters here, we will be considering the output of the model. Right, so we have the model which predicts the distribution. So in our case, it might be the model which predicts the distribution over the actions, right? And so what we might want to do, we might want to find such a d, so that not the size of the d will be limited by c, but that the change in the output in the predictions of the model will not change much. So what we can do is we can look at, I don't know, the policy for W and the policy for W plus D, right? And we want these, the outcomes of the models, to be reasonably similar. So in order to compare distributions, we usually use the KL divergence. So what we might want is such a direction so that the KL divergence of the two distributions will be limited by some change. So instead of allowing one step to change the weight slightly, we allow the change to the update to change the weights in any way you want, but in a way that the predictions will change only slightly. And this will respect this effect on which parameters have on the output. So it allows us to use this better pointing gradients. By the way, if you solve this constraint optimization problem, what you will get is that this D, right, should be what you would expect, the second gradient method. So it should be the loss or the gradient of the loss divided by the Hessian of the loss. Right, and in this specific case, it's also the Fisher information metric or Fisher information matrix of the Fisher information matrix of the model. I would just say F. In a sense, this is some geometrical interpretation that when you want to measure the length of the changes which you want to compute, then instead of using the Euclidean metric, you might want a different one. And the different metric is exactly the Fisher information metric, which is also the Hessian in this specific case. Generally, they don't need to be the same, but if you are predicting a distribution, then they are. So in a sense, all this is just saying we want to have a second order method, right? But the motivation is nice, I think. The Fisher information matrix, what it is, it's actually a matrix where we which we form by multiplying the scores, right? The score is just the gradient of the logarithm of the likelihood. Like this is nearly our loss. So this is the gradient of this. So this is actually the gradient, And this is also the gradient, and they are multiplied together in order to create the official information metric. And it can be shown that this is actually the, it is here, that it is, this is actually the second derivative of the KL divergence between these two distributions. So it is actually a Hessian of something. It's the Hessian of the Hessian of this KL divergence. All this is just like a motivation. I would think that either you have heard of it or not, and then it was just a very brief introduction. What can we do? The problem with this, like, everybody would like to have a working second order method. However, this Hessian slash Fisher information matrix is too large, right? It is quadratic in the size of the parameters, and it's very impractical to like construct it explicitly for very large neural networks. So there are ways how you can approximate it reasonably. You can use the conjugate gradient algorithm. That's the algorithm which can like solve a linear equation without the access to A, but with an access to some function which for a given Y gets AY, right? So if you are able to compute the matrix vector products, then the conjugate gradient algorithm will solve this in very small number of updates. Usually the literature says that if you do like 10 steps of the conjugate gradient algorithm, you will get a reasonably good solution. And each of these steps will require evaluating one product. And so what then we can do, we can solve the problem of the F times D being the gradient, being like the derivative of the loss. And if we solve it, we get what we want, G, which is approximately the gradient divided by the Fisher information matrix. But it's really tricky. If you want, there is a paper here referenced here and on the next pages where they show how they do it. If you think about it very carefully, you can compute this product with the Fisher information metric using a single backpropagation in a neural network without actually constructing the whole Fisher information metric. Because you need to call it something like 10 times, if you have large batches, I don't know, with 200 elements, then you can do these products for just a subset of the data, for example, 1/10 of the data. So you can actually compute this the second order step in a time which is roughly proportional just to a single forward and backward run in the normal neural network. However, they also need to do a line search, which I will just ignore for the time being. So it's difficult, it's very tricky, implementing is a pain, but it can be done. And it's not obvious whether it's better than just a natural SGD. In any way, why am I talking about it? It's because of the TRPO paper. In the TRPO paper, they came with this idea. Let's do the policy improvement in a different way. Right? So we have seen several approaches to do the policy improvement. Like, so either we try to maximize the value function. Right. That's what the policy gradient theorems do. Right. So the reinforce even the DDPG, like they try to compute the gradient of the value function. You can do it for stochastic policies, you can do it for the deterministic policy differently, but generally you do it like this. Then in the soft actor critic, what you do is you try to make your policy being close to the softmax of the Q functions. And here in the DRPO, we will see a third method. And first, what we do is we realize that if we have two policies, then we can compute the value function of one of these policies by considering the value function of the other policy and then updating it. And by updating, what I mean, we will sample the states from the on policy distribution of this pi wave, I don't know, pi tiled, I don't know how it's pronounced in English, and the action from the new policy of the advantages. Right, we have talked about the advantages already. That the advantage is just the Q value minus the value function, the state value function, right? Like that's how better on average this action is than the other one. And so the authors claim that this holds. So when we want to evaluate policy I will call it by head because I don't know how to pronounce tiled. This seems to be too very long. So this pi head is the value function of the original pi. And now where this has sampled the things differently, right? So what we need to do is we need to fix it. And in order to fix it, we sample the states from the pi head, we sample the actions from the pi head. And what we do is we look at the advantages. So we need to like get rid, I don't have this very nicely prepared, and you can see that I'm really babbling a bit. So can I do it now or not? Okay, so at this point, let's just believe that this worked, and I will think about it and tell you next week. It will be something very simple. The proof was really three lines, so I'm just not seeing something. Okay, I cannot just do it. So let's write it. The V pi is the expectation over all states in the on policy distribution, and the expectation over the actions of the rewards. Right, can we do it just like this? Maybe it will be enough. So for the V pi hat, we just need to sample from the different policy distribution from a different policy over the actions. So what we need to do is I'm going to cheat. So I'm just going to look in the original paper. So this is the one. It's really a complex paper. Yep. So this is the proof, and yeah, they formulated a bit differently here. We know how we can compute the advantage. The advantage is the value in the next state plus the reward, the value in the previous one. So we just look at this right side. We expand the advantages Yep, so now we have all the rewards. Then these values, they will all telescope apart from the one in the first state. Yep. And that's exactly the value function of the original policy, and this is for all the trajectories in the new policy. Okay, so I'm convinced, and I will show you the nicer proof on the next lecture. Okay, but before we'll end, I will just tell you why we are doing this. Good thing is that if the advantage function would be less like non-negative, then we know that by performing this update, our policy would improve. So this is the reason why we are considering this, because it allows us to come up with a different policy improvement step. And what we will do is we will try to find a policy such that the advantage of the old policy of the new chosen action is greater than or equal to zero. And if we do it, then the new policy will be better, equal or even better than the previous ones, right? So this is the target of attack. And what the authors do is they show that under some circumstances, they can guarantee that the value of the new policy will be really strictly better than the previous ones. However, there is this negative factor here, which like decreases the estimate. So we know that the value of this will be our estimate minus some weird constant. And this weird constant will be a KL divergence between different between these two distributions. So what we will be optimizing is we'll be optimizing some function minus the KL divergence in the predictions. And this will result in the update where we want to minimize some loss, subject to the constraint that the KL divergence is at most delta. Right? It's not like that was the original motivation. The original motivation was to maximize some loss minus the distance which depends on the KL divergence, but that's difficult to optimize. So instead they say, okay, so let's consider just the changes where the KL divergence will not change much. And if it will not change much, we know that we will really get strictly better policy than before. So in a sense, to solve this optimization problem, they need the second order methods, right? Because the whole idea is that we will be changing the parameters so that we change the behavior of the whole policy to be better, right? So that's why they do it. So I just wanted to give you a glimpse of what the TRPU algorithm will do. So it's already past the lecture. So I am, as you can see, I'm saying a lot of new stuff on this lecture. So some of that wasn't that great. I'm sorry for that. In any case, we will get back to the trust region policy optimization on the next lecture, and also to the PPO, right? So it was sheer optimism on my side to be able to do it. Yep. In any case, the soft actor critic and the TD3 are there, as you would say it. So we will have a competition with some more advanced environment with continuous sections. So you can look forward to that. you will be able to implement both a TD3 or an SAC for that, and we will then get to the TRPO and PPO on the next week. So before we end, are there any questions on your side? Nice comment. So, like last year, I wasn't really talking about the TRPO and PPO because it's difficult. Like there is a lot of concepts which we usually don't talk about, and they just go between, like, they just say, oh, it's just second order optimization. And if you read the TRPO paper, it's really terrible. I've been reading it for 4 or 5 years, and I'm like starting to get to know what they are, what they mean by some of the things. But the thing is that the PPO algorithm is being used quite a lot. So that's why I kind of started talking about it. But maybe I could just explain what the PPO algorithm does if you want. So in a sense, maybe it would be enough just to like show the objective, and just to prove about the objective itself that it actually works, right? But I'm not really sure whether it would be a good idea. So in any case, the TRPO, like the natural policy gradient and the TRPO and the PPO will not really be the part of the exam. So they are meant more as the like expanding of your knowledge, or like if you will see PPO in the future, you will have an idea of what is happening at least a bit. But I definitely not plan of wanting you to prove things about them, because I have hard time doing it by myself, as we have seen, right? But it seemed to me that this is like some common knowledge, which it would be a good idea to know. So that's why I have included it here. But if you think that it was not a good idea, then you can definitely tell me, and I can just skip over this part on the next year. So any idea on your side? Nope. Okay, then thank you for your attention. Thank you that you lived through it. Enjoy your evening, and we'll see each other on Wednesday. Bye-bye. Thanks.